progress.
All right, good morning, everyone. My name is Phil Albrechts. I'm the hearing examiner for Kitsap County, holding a couple hearings today, one on a variance application, the other on a conditional use permit. The hearing format will be the same for both. We'll start off with a presentation from staff. After that, we get comments from the applicants. Then go up, move on to public comments. After that, we go back to staff to answer any questions, and they can provide rebuttal evidence if they want. And then as a matter of due process, the applicant gets final word and the final chance to present rebuttal evidence. And Ms. Jones, who did you have up first today of the two?
The first agenda item will be the Cho zoning variance. Today we have our staff planner, Keith Hafner, who will be coming up.
Okay, great. All right. So we'll start off with that. That is file number 24-04541. As I said, that's and Ms. Jones said this is for a variance application for some setback requirements. By state law, I'm only allowed to consider evidence that's put in the record today, composed of the staff report, the exhibits, and the testimony that's provided. That way, everyone knows what information is being considered. I'm not allowed to talk to staff about the project or get any other information other than what's put into the hearing record today. And along those lines, I'm going to share my screen, show you what exhibits staff has requested that I include in the record. In addition to the staff report, we've got what you should be seeing is page 5 of the staff report, which lists the exhibits, which includes as-built road depictions, stormwater intake and drainage drawings, construction plans, the permit application, water availability, geotech report, septic designer statement, a health district applications, view easements, the notices that were involved, and some information on the setbacks, that kind of thing. So all told, there's a total of 24 documents. At this point, just want to ask if anyone has any objection to putting these in the record or needs to see them. If you want to make any of those comments, go ahead and click on the raise hand button at the bottom of your Zoom screen, or just wave your real hand if you're in the meeting room to get Ms. Jones' attention. Not seeing any objections, so I'll go ahead and admit exhibits 1 through 24 as listed in the staff report. And so who's our lead staff person today on this one?
Today it is Keith Hafner.
Okay, Mr. Hafner, let me swear again. Just raise your right hand. Do you swear affirm to tell the truth, nothing but the truth in this proceeding?
I do.
Okay, great. Go ahead.
Go ahead and begin the presentation.
Oh, I probably have to stop my share. There we go.
We should see it momentarily.
All right, there it is.
All right, so today we're presenting a variance for a rural wooded setback, and I wanted to let, for the record, show that the notice of application used a 90% reduction along the east and east property line, but the final request was for an 80% reduction for both the south and east property line that faces the rural wooded zone, just for the clarification. Next slide. The applicant requests approval of a zoning variance to construct a single-family residence. The east and south parcel line is adjacent to rural wooded zone, requiring a 100-foot setback. Request is for an 80% reduction for a total of a 20-foot setback for each of those property lines. Next slide. The applicants, Dong Wu and Jin Young Cho, excuse me if I'm pronouncing it incorrectly, completed the zoning variance application on January 22, 2026. A notice of application was dated April 3, 2026 that was sent out. Because this is a single family residence and falls under the threshold, this project is exempt from SEPA review. Next slide. This is an 0.82 acre parcel located in the Central Valley, Kitsap neighborhood. It was created by a short plat in 1977. The short plat was later altered to update the access via easement for the parcel. This was done in 2010 by the applicant. Next slide. Zoning for this parcel in Central Kitsap is rural residential with a density of one dwelling unit per 5 acre. So this is a historical lot, smaller than the current zone allows. Next slide. Two geotechnical reports and letters were provided. The first report was from Resolve Engineering in 2022, and they concluded in their words that there did not seem to be any geological issues of concern for the proposed building areas of the property. Later, we requested an updated report requesting information on the northwest quadrant. That report was from Right Angle Engineering in 2025 and described the site as the ground slopes downward from the northwest downward to the northwest with gradients ranging from 12 to 27% and an overall average of 22%. A local bench located in the northwest quadrant features milder slopes between 12 and 17%. Next slide. After reading the report and consulting with our staff here in-house, it is our opinion that the reports did not rule out any development in the northwest quadrant that would allow a single-family residence either without a variance or allow a smaller variance request. Next slide. In summarizing our response to these code selections that we use for our review, views in rural zones do not meet the code standards for a variance, unfortunately. Increased costs of moving utilities, design change, and potential cost increase is not a variance criteria. Redesigning a proposed development and relocation we believe is possible without requesting a variance for the rear rural wooded setback. Proposal would be material detrimental to the resident on this parcel. The setback provides a protection from tree fall and fire potential from the rural wooded zone. This request puts the resident in potential danger. All development nearby since the setback change have conformed to the setback requirement. An alternate setback option provided by the applicant does not address the underlying setback need. Next slide. The following comprehensive plan goals and policies are most relevant to this application. Most of the goals are met and policies except land use policy number 54. The zoning code 100-foot setback adjacent to rural wooded zone is not met and creates a conflict between single family residents and forestry land uses contrary to our comprehensive plan. Next slide. To conclude, the Department of Community Development recommends denial of the zoning variance as submitted.
Okay, that it? So I'm just kind of curious, sure. Is there a similar setback requirement on the rural wooded zone? It seems a little, I don't know, off balance that the property owner is the one who bears the burden of the setback to protect, you know, the forest activities on the adjoining lot.
The comprehensive plan called out the need for the forestry land, and I think that the protection for the single family residents, I mean, this is a unique lot, clearly, that it is smaller than is normally adjacent to rural wooded, but in 2013, there was a comprehensive plan update, and the Board of County Commissioners decided that they needed this protection for the development next to rural wooded.
Okay, sounds good, great, thank you. All right, well, let's move on to applicants then. If the applicants want to say anything, and Ms. Jones, is the applicant present in person or virtually?
The applicant is present in person.
Okay, all right, let's bring him up to the podium.
He's making his way up.
Okay, great. Insert your name for the record again. Sir, just need to state your name for the record.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What's your name for the record, sir?
Dong Wu Cho.
Okay. All right. Let me swear you in, sir. Just raise your right hand. You swear affirm to tell the truth, nothing but the truth in this proceeding?
Yes.
Okay. Great. Go ahead.
My My language skill has declined since I left my job 13 years ago, so my delivery could be halting and slow. So actually, I prepared a printed copy of my statement today for everybody who have an easier time to understand.
Okay.
But today, I had a very two important information available in last 7 days ago. The county's staff report was available on June 4th, 2026, and the hearing today is June 11th, 2026. And before the release of county's report, I submitted the owner statement on June 2nd. And that owner statement describes the background and all the information and the analysis available at that time. The staff report reveals quite a different kind of information that I need actually more time to digest and then analyze and complete my report. But I want to go ahead and then read my prepared statement. But I may need a little time to improve my, you know, presentation and my argument.
Okay, sir, and we can do that in a couple different ways. I mean, we can continue the hearing from today to a later date so that you can come back and complete your verbal presentation, or I can just leave the record open and you can provide written comments. So.
I would like to have you open record for, open for
additional written comment.
Yes.
And okay, yeah, we'll do that then.
And how soon do I have to complete that?
Would another week be enough time?
Yeah, that I think that will do.
Okay, that's fine then. All right. Okay,
and,
go ahead.
As I said, I got the two key information from the county just 7 days ago. One is the setback requirement was adopted in 2013, and county waived that requirement for the lots developed before 2013. So with that one, I'll start to read my statement.
Yep.
Okay. Hearing testimony, date June 11, 2026, to Honorable Hearing Examiner from Dongwoo Cho. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. I submitted the owner statement on June 2nd, 2026. Which presented my reasons for variance relief. Because the owner statement was prepared before the staff report was released, my testimony today focuses on responding to the staff report issued on June 4th, 2026. One correction on the staff report, you know, clerical, you know, correction. One correction, the home footprint is 34 feet wide, not the 54 feet wide, as stated on page 3 of the staff report. The staff report for the first time revealed that 100-foot setback rule was adopted in 2013. And the county waived the requirement for a home built in 2015 in my subdivision. This information simplifies and strengthening my request for a variance. From the beginning, I tried to find out when the zoning ordinance was adopted. Neither first reviewer or a senior staff member could answer this simple question. The county also declined to comment on my submission relating to variance guidelines, which is KCC 17560010. My reference to the home built in 2015 was never addressed until the staff report. On page 7, the staff report states, regarding to my lot, since this lot was not developed at the time and is under development now, it must meet the current codes. This is not the most important statement in the entire report. It established the county's own rule. If a lot was developed before December 2, 2013, the 100-foot setback does not apply. County defined that my lot was not developed before 2013. But I bought the lot that from a subdivision that was developed in 2010, just like my neighbor's lot who built a home in 2015. So my lot was fully engineered and developed in 2010. Land was cleared. Rock-lined ditches and drainage pipe were installed. An access road and a driveway was constructed. And a 30-foot utility easement was recorded. Also, a view easement was recorded, and the fire marshal asked a developer to put in a hammerhead turnaround. So all the infrastructure required to build a home was already there in 2010. But there is another way to tell whether my lot was developed before 2013. That is, I spoke to the owner of the home built in 2015 in the same subdivision, and he told me that he didn't have to file a SDAP. Permit, that is a site development activity permit. And he couldn't find any record relating to SDAP. This indicates that the county treated that lot as already developed before 2013. My lot is in the same subdivision, thus my lot was developed before the adoption date as well. The county exempt lots developed before the rural wooded land setback with ordinance. My lot should be exempt as well. The county's own rule requires restoring the rural residential setback. I have relied on the 2005 variance guideline as the main avenue for variance relief. However, even though my case meets all four requirements, all four criteria of the code, the county did not review my submissions. When asked why, the county did not reply. The staff report is the first time the county has responded. Its responses make clear that the county treated the 100 feet setback as absolute and not subject to any circumstances relating to the variance guideline. The staff report reveals only the limited information about the application of the home built in 2015. The county has not provided other relevant information such as a permit issue date or SDAP requirements. The owner tells me that the permit was issued on July 1st, 2014, almost 7 months after the 2013, the ordinance was adopted. County had 7 months to require a 100-foot setback. The development status of the site to qualify the building application for an exemption. The development date is the deciding factor. Since development predates the ordinance adoption date, the rural residential setback should be restored to my lot. These conclusions overrides the objections raised in the staff report. Before the staff report was released, I wrote in my own owner statement on page 7 that, quote, this subdivision was adopted during a transition period in setback requirements to enforcement. I thought the county was catching up with this rule. I thought that this setback requirement was established a long time ago. But it turns out that 2013. So let me continue. That this subdivision was approved during a transitional period in enforcement. Applying today's interpretation to a 2010 small lot subdivision produced an unreasonable result. It reduced available lot to 22% of the lot, which is already small, less than 1 acre lot. And it put me into the worst part of the lot. It has slopes from both sides converging in that location, and the lowest part of the lot, therefore, it's always wet. And very difficult to, build a home. And county's attitude is conclusion is, Okay, with enough engineering and preparation, you can still build. But when after 100 setback from both sides, and then the allow 50 feet this front setback for rural residential, you know, setback rule, then I have only 18 feet by 94 feet, you know, parcel, which is too narrow and too small, you know, to build, especially in a, you know, wetted area. So the county says such development occur frequently, and so it's not a big deal. But the those types of development may happen in dense urban area, not in the rural residential area. So the staff report indicate that there was no transitional period in enforcement at all. The rule simply changed in 2013 after the subdivision had already been engineered and developed. Applying a setback designed for a minimum 5 acre rural parcel to a 0.82 acre lot produce exactly the types of unreasonable and unintended outcome which the variance criteria are meant to prevent. The county cannot retroactively apply a later adopted rule to previously developed lot without creating an unnecessary hardship. The fact shows that the lot was developed under the pre-2013 standards, and as such, the previous setback should be restored. In summary, my lot was developed in 2010. County adopted the 100-foot setback ordinance in 2013. But the county waived the ordinance to the lot developed before the adoption date. So, therefore, a rural residential setback should be restored to my lot. I respectfully request the county's decision be overturned and that the rural residential zoning ordinance be restored to my lot. Thank you again for the opportunity to present my case.
Okay. And Mr. Wu, do you want to present your written statement as an exhibit into the record?
Yes.
Okay. So any objections from the county for admitting Mr. Wu's written statement as Exhibit 25?
Yes.
I believe the statement may already be in the record as Exhibit number 18, if it's the same one that you emailed me.
Okay.
No,
it's different.
I haven't emailed this one. Yeah.
That one's different? Oh, okay. Then yes, that it would be Exhibit 25. Yeah. Sorry about that.
25 then. All right. Thank you, Mr. Wu. And like I said, at the end of the hearing, I'll set up a schedule for your additional written comment, and we'll give you time to provide that comment as well. So.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Are there any questions from the county staff or from you?
No questions at this time, Mr. Wu. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Okay. So move on to public comments. Is there anyone in the meeting room, Ms. Jones, who might want to say something?
There's no one in the meeting room and no one online. I see the attendee is for the next agenda item. So.
Okay. So back to staff. Any response that staff wants to make at this time?
I do, and I appreciate what a very well thought out and presented response. I appreciate that. I was in contact with Mr. Cho several times, but I want to clarify a couple things. I think most of the comments come about allowing a similar design in the neighborhood in 2015. Unfortunately, that address is 3058 Sonata Place Northwest. I did do a significant amount of research. I researched every lot surrounding that rural wooded zone, and that one, in fact, was started and completed, applied for October 13th, 2013. It was prior to the code changes. It was prior to the ordinance of December 2nd. So unfortunately, for Mr. Cho, that was vested to a prior code, so it doesn't apply. In addition, the other addresses around there, I did find one at 3020 Sonata Place Northwest. And although the house was built in 1979, there was a garage dated 20. The permit number is 20-01995. That was originally applied for in 2020. And by the way, that does meet the 100-foot setback and was required to meet that setback and does, in fact, meet that setback. As a general rule, this is not the first 100-foot rural wooded setback that I've done. I've approved others that have met that setback, either met it fully and or have requested a variance. And we've worked through the process on smaller lots around Y Lake, for example, where we've worked with the applicant to offer design changes that would meet the character and the design of the rural residential lot and still keep that safety setback from the rural wooded. And we're not saying that we wouldn't approve something that would be a variance request from both the south and the east line, but the request is so significant when there are other areas on the lot that is potential for development. I did want to talk a little bit about the view easement, and that is something that has been a factor throughout the various iterations that we've seen, and unfortunately a view easement, because the higher part of the parcel does command a better view, is unfortunately not a variance reviewable criteria for us. I wish it was. Talked a little bit about the site development activity permit in 2010. What hasn't been, I think, clearly identified is that Mr. Cho owns both of the lots that are adjacent to that road, and the site development activity permit that is commonly associated with splitting of properties, putting in the underlying infrastructure is done all the time. But unfortunately, the lots that remain are still undeveloped, and we consider them undeveloped and need to meet current code when they are developed. And so that's where we're at this part. Let's see. The one other concern that I want to address a little bit about this, the reports that were presented, is we have a little bit of a concern when we have one geological report that says there clearly is no concerns on the lot. Then the second one comes in and talks about the northwest quadrant is lower on the lot and is potentially wetter. And unfortunately, that is also where the septic reserve is designed. So we're in conflict here. Either the septic reserve is safe to be in that area, which means development could potentially be there, or the septic system can't be in there. So that is the conundrum that we have as a county. I'm not saying that we wouldn't agree to and or entertain other options for a redesign in a different area of the lot with maybe less of a request of a variance, but where it's located now with the ask of the variance, we think that a redesign would offer both keeping within the safetiness of keeping away from that rural wooded zone and still maintain the character of the rural setback. And to grant a variance when we've already kept others in the area to that 100-foot setback also seems out of character with keeping with fairness in the neighborhood. So I'm not sure if I've missed anything, but do you have any questions for me?
No, I think you covered it pretty well. Thank you, Mr. Hafner.
And so Darren, I apologize. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
I didn't know if Darren had, my supervisor, had anything that he wanted to add to.
All right, Mr. Gurney, let me swear you in. You swear from tell truth, nothing but the truth in this proceeding?
I do.
Okay, great.
The only thing I wanted to provide is that the intent of the rural wooded setback that was adopted in 2013 primarily is a protection mechanism because of forestry activities, the possibility of wind throw and fire danger to single-family residences. That was the intent behind the code. The county has struggled with this because of legally existing parcels that are smaller than the 5-acre minimums in rural residential. So we, in the past, we have gone to Department of Natural Resources because they were kind of the impetus behind that code. And we've requested to reduce that setback from 100 feet, and they have pushed back on that notion. So we do recognize the difficulty with this, and when we can, we try to accommodate these variances. But we do see that there are opportunities to build elsewhere. So it is a very difficult situation.
But my question, I'm just kind of, I guess it kind of goes beyond, I think, my scope of review, but kind of the fairness of the regulation. It kind of seems like, you know, this is to protect the residential property owner from the impacts of forest practices. It seems like the owner of the forest practices lot should be the one that has the 100-foot setback, then, not the owner of the residential property. I mean, that's why I was asking. I mean, is there a setback for the forest practices property?
To my knowledge, there's no set, like, they don't have a limit on how far they can do the forestry up to a certain point. I would love to opine on that as well. I just know that the code was written in a specific way and carried through the public process.
Yeah, that's my job to follow it. Yeah, I was kind of curious on the equities of it. But okay, thanks, Mr. Green.
Okay, thank you.
All right, so Mr. Wu, you get final word there. If you want to just save that for your written comment, that's fine. Like I said, your written comments will
be... I have make a comment on what Mr. Gurney said. Right now. That couldn't be the reason for the rejecting my application, because there are a lot of homes just very close to the forest land. I never seen any kind of a conflict with the forest the operation, and the two lots facing my property has been cut, has been logged very recent time. So this kind of concerns, like falling trees, that's, excessive concern, and I don't need that kind of, the hand holding, if you will. And then the as I mentioned, that the fire marshal came out and asked developer to put the turnaround space for the easy access to the forest. So the lot is well equipped to deal with any kind of a fire danger. And my neighbor's home, I own two lots, and the next one is neighbor's home. And his setback is only 20 feet from the forest land. It's been there for 16 years, and I never seen any conflict with the forest operation. So... And then let me take some risk. All right, the county cannot make the entire world safe. There is other kind of protections I can find, and private insurance, and several ways. But the risk always present. And we cannot completely eliminate all the risk. So what Mr. Gurney said cannot be a reason for rejecting my application. And then I have a list of questions to the county officials. Okay.
Go ahead.
Yes. The information like when the code was adopted and what was the policies governing that period. It was withheld for a long time. As I said, I tried to find out, but nobody can answer that. So I claim that this whole process in the county was not transparent to me. That's not fair. And I asked two county staff and it is surprising to me that they didn't know the answer when I asked. So, do you know the Jennifer Crayfields? Does she supposed to know this kind of rules as a staff member?
So, Mr. Roy, I'm not, what are you saying she didn't know about? She didn't, what was the question she didn't answer?
He didn't answer that particular staff member, whether she's supposed to know or not.
Yeah, but what didn't she know? Are you, you're saying she didn't answer one of your questions? What was the question she didn't answer?
When the setback was adopted.
Okay. All right. So your question is, wasn't she supposed to know that? Is that your question?
That's my question.
That's, I don't think that's really relevant to.
Okay, I'll retract that.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, what's your other questions?
Big question is why the county didn't require SDAP to the home built in 2015.
Okay.
I think if a lot is not developed, county will ask for this SDAP, but the county didn't require that. So, my neighbor's home, the lot was considered as developed, and my lot is also in the same subdivision. Therefore, it was developed before 2013.
Okay, is that Mr. Green? You can answer that.
Yes, I can speak to that. Sorry, I'm sitting down at the table here with the microphone, but. So an SDAP, the Site Development Activity Permit that's referenced, the triggers for that are based on impervious surface thresholds and quantity of soils that are moved. So it is possible that, very possible that a single family residence would not trigger an SDAP, but we are talking about development and we have to talk about it in context where subdivision is a form of development, an SDAP is a form of development. So it was a building permit. So you have your divisions, you have your engineering and work on the land that is what we call horizontal in the ground, and then your building permit is your vertical construction. And when you go for your vertical construction at the building permit, unless we have a binding element that tells us you absolutely will follow these setbacks, we have to apply the current zoning codes for zoning setbacks. And at the time that we received this application, the setbacks for the zoning include this 100-foot setback. So, I mean, it's not just that the parcel is developed, it's also when the building permit comes into the system, even if you had an SDAP in the past. but sometimes those SDAPs will identify a specific building site within a residential subdivision, and that is not the case here in terms of what we found.
Any other questions, Mr. Rule?
I'm sorry, Mr. Examiner, what was that?
Oh, I was just, are you having
can
trouble
you,
hearing?
Can I show this, my engineering drawing attached in the previous statement? Can you project that on screen?
Yeah, let me see if I can find it.
Okay. The first one.
This one right here?
The first, it's on the top of this.
Oh, okay, let me see.
Okay, no, the in attachment. So the, maybe the last
okay. Part. Okay. Let me scroll, maybe close your eyes if you get motion sick. Is it this document?
No.
No. Okay. Let's go.
As we're proceeding with this, Mr. Examiner, I just wanted to make a quick point of clarification pointed out from one of our staff. The individual permits that I referenced for subdivision versus an engineering site development activity permit and a building permit, each of those vest to the codes in place unless the preceding decision explicitly calls out a different metric of approval.
Yes.
So
yeah,
that was where I was going with the different pieces of development and how we define it and where when they vest to different codes.
So what exhibit are we looking at right here? Ms. Jones?
This is exhibit number 2 in the record.
All right.
So this is the engineering plan. The lot was developed according to this plan. And my lot is one on the right corner. That one, yeah. And then the neighbor's home is actually the next to second one. Could you point that out? Not that lot, but next one, the bigger lot. Okay, yeah, that is the lot. And then the based on this drawing. This contractor built according to this specification. So, I'm not sure whether this, engineering plan was recorded or not. It's clear that the lot was developed in 2010.
Okay.
So I have one additional question. How do we define subdivision development? Is my lot is in the subdivision, or my neighbor's lot is in the subdivision?
want to answer that, Mr. Gurney? Yeah.
Well, I mean, without having a permit in front of me, I don't know how to accurately reflect which subdivision we're talking about. We know we have a subdivision, a short plat of three lots, and we have an indication of a road going up, but there's no indication of building sites. It just has a turnaround. Mm-hmm.
At the corner, it says home site, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. So we have short plat 1085R1.
Yeah. It says a home site there.
Okay. And that's and Mr. Gurney, you don't know if this is an approved plat map or not?
It's not consistent with what we have in our records as approved plat map.
Okay.
But the lot was developed according to this plan, then the lot is developed. That's my point.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Chu, what could actually be helpful for you is, like I said, you have until a week from this Friday to submit some additional written comments. If you can find the approved plat map for your lot, that would be very helpful in assessing this. There is I wish I could remember the full name of the case. There is a Pierce County case that provides that approved plat does vest you to the extent that uses and design is disclosed in the plat map. So if you have a building site, or that home site is clearly delineated on an approved plat map, that may, could be in your favor. I think, Mr. Gurney, you recognized that as well. You mentioned before that if the SDAP contained building sites that you consider that best, then I think the same kind of principle probably applies to plat maps as well. So, Mr. Wu, if you can find that approved plat map, and Mr. Gurney, Mr. Hafner could probably help you on that. If it shows the home site, that may help you out.
The map is already attached in my own statement.
Okay, but it's not clear whether that's an approved plat map as opposed to some draft engineering plan, or I don't know where it came from, so I just need some verification. Like I say, I mean, Mr. Gurney, you can, or Mr. Hafner, can you maybe dredge up the approved plat map for his lot so we can figure out what's going on there?
I do actually have that with me right now today. I can provide it with him today, and it is not similar to that drawing that we just saw,
right, okay.
Other than the fact that the road is existing, but it's not show sites.
Okay. All right. Okay. Yeah. So Mr. Wu, yeah, it doesn't sound like the plat map may be able to help you. I don't know if you can identify where that drawing came from that you're using, that would help me out.
Okay. How should I present that plat map?
Well, it's that Mr. Hafner saying he has it right now, but that's not going to help you. It doesn't show any home sites on it. So, but what I'm asking is that document that we just looked at, that was just put on the screen, I just want to know where that comes from, what it is. And Mr. Gurney or Mr. Hafner, can you figure that out maybe in the next week, or?
We can look into that and see if there's any other documentation. And if we have a document, we can provide a memorandum to the hearing examiner.
Okay, that sounds good. So Mr. Wu, it sounds like the staff is going to kind of be working with you to see if they can find any, where this document comes from, if there's any officially approved document that lays out the home site. Like I said, that may enable you to build where you want, so that'll be an important point. So let me ask county staff, is a week enough time to work with Mr. Wu on this, or maybe? Okay, all right. So let's try to get the comments in a week, a week from this Friday. And if either party needs a chance to respond to what the other party wrote, I'll give you a chance. Just note that on a week from Friday. If you see something coming in from the other side and you want a chance to respond, just ask for a chance and I'll give you a few more days to do that. So does that make sense? So Mr. Wu, I think, yeah, because normally, improvements in a plat don't vest you to a building site. Again, like I said, unless there's some approved document that shows the building site itself, that's, I think, what you're really going to need, what will help you the most here. So, and then any other comments you want to make, Mr. Wu, in the next week, that's fine too. Just add it to your written comments.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right, so I think that wraps it up for this the hearing on this variance application. We have one more to go. Let me put that up on my screen here. All right, and this is, yep, okay, got the right one. This is a conditional use permit for the Wixon Reservoir number 2, permit file number 25-03085. And let's see. Staff lead on this one.
Our staff planner for this item will be Kate Millward, and she's walking up, okay. And there she's on the screen.
Good morning. All right, okay, Ms. Millward, let me swear you in. Just raise your right hand. Do you swear affirm to tell the truth, nothing but the truth in this proceeding?
Yes.
Okay, great. Like I said at the beginning today, the hearing format is the same for both. We'll have Ms. Millward, then the applicant, then the public, then back to Ms. Millward, and then applicant gets final word. I got to share my screen for the exhibit list here real quick, though. Just got to scroll up to that. There we go. Okay, so the exhibits supporting the staff recommendation on this one, we have a total of 21 composed of the staff reports, building elevations, construction plans, the environmental review, sewer water availability, but just one public comment, it looks like, from the Department of Ecology, and one from Transportation as well, stormwater narrative, and the notices. Total of 21. Anyone out there have any objections to their entry in the record or needs to see them? Again, if you're participating virtually, just click on the raise hand button at the bottom of your screen, or if you're in the meeting room, wave your arms. If hearing, seeing no objections, I'll admit exhibits 1 through 21. So, Ms. Bloor, go ahead. And I believe I just swore you in, right? So
you did. Thanks.
Okay, go ahead.
All right, so this proposal is for an additional reservoir for the Silverdale Water District, another 2 million gallon reservoir to be added to the site that they already have a reservoir on. So the conditional, Okay, next slide, please. Great. The conditional use permit was deemed complete on September 25th, 2025. And a notice of application was distributed pursuant to Title 21 Land Use and Development Procedures, which provided recipients with project information and an opportunity for public comment. The department received comments from the Washington Department of Transportation regarding potential requirements for Apex Airport, and from the Washington Department of Ecology regarding a nearby Model Toxics Control Act site. Pursuant to WAC 197-11-355, Department of Community Development used an optional DNS process for SEPA for this project on April 2nd, 2026. No appeals were filed, and therefore the SEPA determination is final. Next slide, please. The parcel is located in an industrial zone, and the use is allowed in this industrial zone, and there are no critical areas located that would impact any kind of development. There's a small slope down in the barely just off-site, but the geological report said that it's not a problem for development. Next slide, please. The Water District is proposing to construct a 2 million gallon reservoir located just east of the existing 1 million gallon reservoir on the property. The proposed tank will serve as a regional facility that supports the existing and future domestic and fire flow demands within Silverdale Water District and adjacent Water District service areas. The proposal includes the new steel tank, the water piping, overflow piping, which connects to the existing overflow system, paved access without parking, security fencing, and a security gate. The project will be constructed as one project and will not be phased. The request here is an approval for a conditional use permit to build a new reservoir because this is a conditional use in the industrial zone. Next slide, please. The water tower height, the relevant code section here is 17.415.400 for public facilities specifically. And the water tower height is over 95 feet, which exceeds the height limit of 35 for the zone. However, footnote 40 in the code waives the height limit for structures such as this water tower or reservoir. The parcel is already developed as a water utility and provides a solid screen along the right-of-way, meeting the code. 17.415.400A8 requires a solid screen buffer to surround the facility. Next slide, please. In addition to standard conditions put on the CUP by development, stormwater, fire, and land use planning, we responded to the public comments that we received with these additional codes, conditions. The first is that the structure must be painted in colors to blend within the surrounding landscape. The second is the project must comply with Federal Aviation Administration lighting requirements for taller structures near an airport. And the third is, if during excavation, contamination from the Model Toxics Contract Act site to the north were to be encountered, report those findings can be made during to the website listed in the condition. Any impacted soil or other environmental media at the project location should be characterized and, if applicable, remediated in accordance with the applicable environmental regulations, notably MTCA and the cleanup rule, Chapter 173-340 in the WAC. Next slide, please. And so with those additional conditions, we recommend approval for the conditional use permit for the second reservoir on this site. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, it looks pretty straightforward, kind of an ideal location for something like this. It doesn't sound like anyone around it is going to have any issues with it. So, well, let's move on to the applicant. Does the applicant want to add anything at this point?
Yes, we have a representative for the applicant coming up to the podium.
Okay, great. Okay, sir, what's your name for the record?
Yeah, Norm Olson with NL Olson and Associates Engineering.
Okay, Mr. Olson, let me swear you in. Just raise your right hand. You swear affirm to tell the truth, nothing but the truth in this proceeding?
Yes, I do.
Okay, great. Go ahead.
Yes, we just want to say that we appreciate staff's their work on this project. And as you've said, it is pretty straightforward, we think. Today, we do have, along with me present for this hearing, is Ian Smith. He's the district engineer, and Clayton Posey, he's the project engineer with RH2 Engineering, just in case it doesn't look like there's anybody here, but I don't know out in space if there is or not. So I guess I just wanted to say that we're available, and we do have plans that I can give to the clerk if needed to go over.
Oh, so. Sounds good. Perfect. Thank you, sir. All right, Ms. Jones, anyone in the meeting room want to say anything?
We don't have anyone in the room. We do have a couple of attendees online. I believe one of them is with the applicant team, and the other one.
If either of those two, if you want to say something, just click on your virtual hand, and we'll get you in here to make some comments if you want. It doesn't look like we have any takers there. I guess that makes sense. So. Okay, I guess staff, Ms. Miller, do you need to make any response to the applicant's comments?
No, thank you.
Okay, I guess with that, then I can go ahead and close the hearing. Yeah, it's a bit more straightforward than the last one, and it's always nice to see that that so much growth in Kitsap County, and we're able to keep up with it with projects like this. Obviously, a needed facility, and doesn't really appear to have any. Major significant impacts given its location. So should be a fairly straightforward and easy approval, and we'll get that out in the next couple weeks. So thanks all for participating today, and we're adjourned. Have a great rest of the day.
Thank you, Examiner.